This podcast brought to you by Hope 1032.
Many of us would love to go to space, but imagine if you got the chance to experience what life is like on Mars, all while staying on Earth.
Okay, I'm interested. You've piqued my attention.
Well, that's what happened when the NASA-funded High Seas program popped six humans into a mock Mars habitat in Hawaii for 1 year. And now there's a podcast that documents what took place among the crew. It's called The Habitat.
And the rules are the atmosphere outside is poison. If they step outside without a spacesuit on, they'll die. They're going to live like that in this little dome, cut off from their friends and families for 1 whole year. It's like the premise of a space-age reality show. The true story of six strangers picked to live in a dome to find out what happens when people go to Mars.
Host of that podcast, Lynn Levy, joins us on the line. Good morning, Lynn.
Hello, how you doing?
Doing well. Now, can you tell us a bit more about Operation High Seas and the goals of the program?
Sure. So the High Seas Project is on a mountain in Hawaii, sort of very removed from the Hawaii that you picture in your head. You know, not too many palm trees, no sweet ocean breezes. It's on this very sparse volcano, very separated from pretty much all of humanity. So it does have a very Marsy vibe to it. And on this volcano, this group of researchers has built a mock Mars habitat, and they have put a few groups of people now, but the group of people I followed was the one that was in there for 1 year, into the habitat to simulate a mission to Mars. And the idea is to see how do people get along with each other, how do they, you know, fare in the mission, do they start to go stir crazy, in what ways do they do well? In what ways do they do poorly? With the idea being like, okay, someday we're going to send people to Mars. What's going to happen when we do?
So, I mean, I would assume that these kind of tests are pretty well protected. So how did you get involved in the project? Why did you get involved with the project? I mean, can you just call NASA out of the blue and say, hey, it's Lynn here. I'd like to podcast this.
I probably could have called NASA, but what I actually did was call the lead researcher. Her name is Kim Binstead. So I was really fascinated with this project. I had been reading about it, and I happened to discover it right before the one-year mission started. And so I called Kim, and I asked her some questions on the phone, and every, you know, thing she said was more interesting than the thing before it. And it just became clear that they were creating this really fascinating little world that was, you know, sort of both a science experiment and, in some ways, a piece of theater. You know, it was this, like, massive simulation, this fake Mars. And I said, well, is there any chance, just, you know, I'm just a little podcaster, is there any chance that I could come down and meet the crew when they go in? Because it was like the next week, basically, they were going to go into the dome to start their year. And she pretty much said, well, if they say okay, then it's okay with me. And so I talked to the crew, and they said, okay. And so I bought a ticket to Hawaii, and I went down and met them. And at that point, I didn't know if they were going to want to document their project or not. It was basically just I was going to hang out with them as they got ready for the mission. And so I did, and then I gave them recorders, and they recorded themselves. They recorded their experience inside the dome.
Now, that leads to my next question, because this is a year of audio on a bunch of different recorders. It's a massive project. How on earth do you whittle down? We have trouble doing this, trying to get an interview down to a few minutes for the air, but how on earth do you whittle down a year of audio into a podcast series of 7-8 episodes?
Painstakingly. So we had, you know, a ton of audio. I had a great producer, Peter, who was working with me, and we put all of the audio. Each person in the dome got their own session in the, you know, audio editing software. We lined it all up. We labeled every little bit of it. I work in Pro Tools, and in that program, like, I had never before gotten to the point where I reached the end of a session where the program said, like, sorry, you can't put any more audio in this timeline.
Wow.
This is all we can handle. But I did on this project. I reached the point where the program was like, I'm out. Sorry. And so we lined everything up, and then actually what we did was every time we would get to something interesting, we would make a note card for it and often draw a little picture. So Like there was one part where they made ice cream out of all the sort of freeze-dried space food, and so I have a little note card that says ice cream, and there's a little drawing of an ice cream cone, and then we put it on a big bulletin board. And when the year was over and all the audio was in, we started arranging and rearranging those note cards, trying to figure out what the structure was going to be.
I would imagine, you know, like the idea of being isolated for 24 hours for any parent mm-hmm. is a thrilling and wonderful proposition. but the notion of doing that for a year and having the time delay, you would really run the gamut of human emotions. I mean, what were kind of some of the really difficult times during that year for these people?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that immediately springs to mind is that one of the people in the dome was from Paris. And while he was in the dome, these terrorist attacks happened in Paris. If you remember the shooting at the Bataclan, and there were, you know, these massive terrorist attacks. And that was something that he had to deal with from very far away, completely isolated from news. You know, there's no television in the dome, no radio. There's basically no internet, although they can have email on this 20-minute delay that simulates the delay to Mars.
Wow.
So he's in the dome. He finds out about this thing, and he's frantically writing to his family and his friends who, you know, I mean, as that news was coming out, it seemed like a lot of people were going to die. And he was... You know, so he's frantically writing back and forth, but because of the rules of the simulation, his email takes 20 minutes to go, and then it takes 20 minutes in the other direction for an email to come back. And if you think about how you feel in a moment like that, you know, if somebody turned to you right now and said, you're in your hometown, you know, like on your mom's street, there's just been a terrorist attack, like you don't want to wait 40 minutes for news. You want to know right away. You want to be on the phone with your mom, you know, right now. And so he went through this, like, very intense experience of having this massive thing happen in his life with his family and his friends, but being at this strange artificial remove from it himself.
I would imagine, too, and he's not surrounded by close friends either, right? I mean, these are kind of people who have just come together. So it's not like in a moment of tragedy, you've got your family around you to rally you.
Yeah, that's true. Although I think it probably cemented some of the bonds inside the habitat. One of the things that I found out in researching the show after I listened to that experience was that there was one American in space on 9/11 in the ISS. And so I also got to sort of look into his experience, which was interesting as well.
Lynn, what I love about this podcast is not just finding out about what it's like to be in a Mars environment for a year, but also the many space facts that you drop in throughout the podcast.
Yeah.
What would you say, if you could narrow it down to one or two, are the most fascinating things you learned about space exploration through making this podcast?
I mean, I think the things that were always the most interesting to me are the things that are just like, a little bit outside of what you normally think of when you think of astronauts. So, like, normally when we think of astronauts, we think of this sort of, like, heroic figure in this gleaming suit, you know, floating in space. And so the stuff that I loved the most was, like, about poop, mostly. so, and on, like, a big research tangent about pooping in space, there was a great story in there about a time when a little nugget of poop escaped on a space shuttle and went floating around the shuttle, freed from the bounds of gravity. And there's actually audio from that mission of the guys watching the little piece of poop float around the shuttle, which is pretty great. there's a very rich history of people trying to go to the bathroom in space, which is funny because we can solve this massive, impossible-seeming problem of how to get people to space, but have a really hard time of figuring out how they can poop when they get there, you know?
That's so true. Amazing.
Yep.
You know, would you ever, I mean, I guess you have participated in a project like this, but would you ever, Lynn, after going through this, ever want to be like those who participated in that dome and spend a year doing it?
I don't think I could, to be honest with you. I mean, it's attractive to me as a storyteller because, like, what an amazing thing to experience and, like, think of the stories you could tell when you get out. But I'm not sure I would have made it. I mean, I have deep respect for people who can make it in there for a year. I can barely make it through, you know, a cocktail party with a bunch of people who I don't like that much. And to make it through a year trapped with them is pretty intense.
I kind of read through these stories and I think of the ideas of sending a man trip to Mars, and I can't help but think mm-hmm. it's going to be a billion-dollar tragedy. We're sending humans to a hostile planet that's years from mm-hmm. rescue. I mean, as you walk through this process, like, realistically, what do you think the chances are of people being successful and us seeing life on Mars?
My guess is we will eventually send people to Mars, because that's just how humans are. Like, we just can't sort of help ourselves from doing the next thing, even if it seems like kind of a bad idea. I mean, I think self-driving cars are probably going to be a pretty big tragedy too, but it's like we can't help it. Hmm. Once we have the technology, we can't help it. I wouldn't be at all surprised if some people died along the way. And I think most, I don't know. It's, you know, we've killed some people in the space program before.
Hmm.
But I imagine we'll eventually land some people there. I anticipate we'll eventually land some people there, because a lot of people want it really badly.
Mm.
That's true.
So true.
And you got people like Elon Musk standing behind it, which mm-hmm. means you've got an unlimited budget.
It's very expensive, even for Elon. My feeling is that we will eventually land people. Now, in terms of people living there long term, I'm not sure. I don't know if when people fantasize about that, I'm not sure how much they think about how incredibly difficult it will be to live there. You know, it is really much more hostile to human life than any place on Earth, any version of living on Earth possibly could be. Sometimes people talk about Mars as like the backup planet. If we just screw up Earth beyond all repair, but I don't think there's any version where living on Mars is easier or safer than living on Earth. I don't know.
Lynn, you spent, I'm guessing, years making this podcast series, and I know that you're a producer at Gimlet as well. What are you working on now? Can you give us a scoop?
Can I give you a scoop?
give us a clue.
I'm working behind the scenes on a couple of other, you know, long-form narrative projects. I'm not going to be hosting anything right now. I'm going to be editing, which is another thing that I do.
Definitely. Giving Pro Tools a workout, we've heard.
That's right. You got it.
Well, I'm assuming that you're going to cover how the galaxy recovered since Thanos uses his Infinity glove,
hey,
right?
Hey, I haven't seen that, so...
I mean, is that? I'm assuming that, you know, how the Avengers piece themselves back together, how the other planets are functioning. Is that the kind of stuff, obviously, you'd be working on?
I mean, I think that's the story. That's the scoop everybody wants right now, obviously.
That podcast would do very well.
It would.
The podcast is called The Habitat, and you can grab it at anywhere where you grab your podcasts. Lynn Levy, host and producer, it's been so much fun talking about Mars and space with you. Thanks for joining us on Hope Breakfast.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.